child on the matter. Jaya Kunjabi, Jaya Giri Mara Re, Giri Mara Re, Vichana Pala Pala, Jaya Giri Mara
Bhaktivedanta Goswami, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, ISKCON founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananda Goti, Vaishnava, Vrindi ki jai, Namacharya, Srila Huidas Thakur ki jai, Paramse Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Parabhunichananda Sidwaita Gadadha, Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrindi Gajai Shishi Radhakrishna Gopikopitnath Sayam Gun Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Gajai Vrindavanam Gajai Maturidam Gajai Jagadathasami Gajai Yamunamai Gajai Shivani Lassi Devi Gajai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Gajai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glories the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. So Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Namani Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pajarni Nipshesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarine. So, Om Ganati Vadanda Shah. Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmeritam Yena. Tosmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So, I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Okay. And we are going to continue. This is our Sunday feast program. Again, because of the COVID, our Sunday feast is online, and all prashadam will be virtual. That means you have to fast until this COVID disaster is over. Just eating virtual prashadam. So anyway, on that happy note, we're going to continue with our Chaitanya Charitamrita reading. We're reading from the fifth chapter of the Adi Leela about the glories of Lord Nityananda. So, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhaktivinoda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhaktivinoda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhaktivinoda. And looks like we got Maha Mantra with us today too. That's very nice, all the way from the country of Fiji in the South Pacific. Okay, let us share the screen. And if some of you do want to read, then you should raise your hand in the participants window and you'll read after I finish my reading. Okay, let's put that down. Sure. Okay. I will start. So, Premanetre Degitara Svarupa Prakasha Gopa Gopi Sangeya Krishnera Vilasa. And translation. But with the eyes of love of Godhead, one can see its real identity as the place where Lord Krishna performed his pastimes with the coward boys and coward girls. And then another famous verse. Chintamani pakata sadma sukalpa briksha laksha vriteshu suravira vipaliantam lakshmi sahasra shatasam ramasevyamanam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, the first progenitor. That means the first father, as Krishna says in the Gita, Ham Bija Prada Gita Ham, who is tending cows, yielding all desires and abodes, built with spiritual gems and surrounded by millions of purpose trees, that's desire trees. He is always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. Purport, this is a verse from the Brahma Sankhita, 5th chapter, text 29. This description of the abode of Krishna gives us definite information of the transcendental place where not only is life eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge, but there are ample vegetables. Hopefully they have broccoli there. Milk, jewels, and beautiful homes and gardens tended by lovely damsels who are all goddesses of fortune. Krishna Loka is the topmost planet in the spiritual sky, and below it are innumerable spheres. A description, spheres means round things, or planets in this particular case, a description of which can be found in Srimad Bhagavatam. In the beginning of Lord Brahma's self-realization, he was shown a transcendental vision of the Vaikuntha spheres by the grace of Narayana. Later, by the grace of Krishna, he was shown a transcendental vision of Krishna Loka. This transcendental vision is like the reception of television from the moon via a mechanical system for receiving modulated waves. But it is achieved by penance and meditation within oneself. Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, states that in Vaikuntha Loka, the material modes of nature represented by the qualities of goodness, passion, and ignorance have no influence. In the material world, the highest qualitative manifestation is goodness. That means the highest mode of nature, which is characterized by truthfulness, mental equilibrium, cleanliness, control of the senses, simplicity, essential knowledge, faith in God, scientific knowledge, and so on. That's how you know whether you're in the mode of goodness. On the other hand, if your life is characterized by fault-finding, twisting the truth, having your mind disturbed, being unclean and out of control of the senses and being a very complex person, anyway, then you're in different modes of nature. Nevertheless, mixed passion and ignorance. Nevertheless, all these qualities are mixed with passion and imperfection. But the qualities in Vaikuntha are a manifestation of God's internal potency. And therefore, they are purely spiritual and transcendental, with no trace of material infection. No planet, even Satchaloka, Satchaloka is Brahma's planet, is comparable in quality to the spiritual planets where the five inherent qualities of the material world, namely ignorance, misery, egoism, anger, and envy, are completely absent. In the material world, everything is a creation. Anything we can think of within our experience, even including even our own bodies and minds, was created. This process of creation began with the life of Brahma, and the creative principle is prevalent all over the material universe because of the quality of passion. But since the quality of passion is conspicuous by its absence in the Vaikuntha planets, nothing there is created. Everything there is eternally existent. So there's no law of cause and effect in the spiritual world. Cause and effect only is applied where there's some passion. And because there is no mode of ignorance, there's also no question of annihilation or destruction. In the material world, one may try to make everything permanent by developing the above-mentioned qualities of goodness, but because goodness in the material world is mixed with passion and ignorance, nothing here can exist permanently, despite all the good plans of the best scientific brains. Therefore, in the material world, we have no experience of eternity bliss and fullness of knowledge. But in the spiritual world, because of the complete absence of the qualitative modes, everything is eternal, blissful, and cognizant. Cognizant means aware, fully aware. Everything can speak, everything can move, everything can hear, and everything can see in fully blessed existence for eternity. That means the blades of grass can hear and move. The animals can hear and speak and move. And actually, a perverted reflection of this world would be something like a Walt Disney movie, in which you have, you know, the animals talking and the different creatures, or broccoli even talking, or the flowers talking. And the spiritual world's like that. It's amazing. The situation being so, naturally space and time in the forms of past, present, and future have no influence there. It's eternal present. In the spiritual sky, there is no change because time has no influence. Although there are activities, you may say, well, if time has no influence, then everybody is just like frozen. And they don't move. No. There's movement, and there's a spiritual time, but it doesn't control things. The only control is Krishna and love of Krishna. Consequently, the influence of Maya, the total external energy which induces us to become more and more materialistic and forget our relationship with God, is also absent there. As spiritual sparks of the beams emanating from the transcendental body of the Lord, we are all permanently related with Him and equal to Him in quality. The material energy is a covering of the spiritual spark, but in the absence of that material covering, The living beings in Vaikuntha Loka are never forgetful of their identities. They're eternally cognizant of their relationship with God in their constitutional position of rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord. So that's an interesting statement. Understanding that statement, we can make the point that if you get rid of that covering, you will automatically understand or be cognizant of your relationship with God. Because Prabhupada here says the material covering energy is a covering of the spiritual spark, but in the absence of that material covering, in other words, take it away, the living beings, Vaikuntha Loka, are never forgetful of their identities. Because they constantly engage in the transcendental service of the Lord, it is natural to conclude that their senses are also transcendental, for one cannot serve the Lord with material senses. The inhabitants of Vaikuntha Loka do not possess material senses with which to lord it over material nature. Persons with a poor fund of knowledge, means very little knowledge or no knowledge, conclude that a place void of material qualities must be some sort of formless nothingness. In reality, however, there are qualities in the spiritual world, but they are different from the material qualities because everything there is eternal, unlimited, and pure. The atmosphere there is self-illuminating, and thus there is no need of a sun, a moon, fire, electricity, and so on. One who can reach that abode does not come back to the material world with a material body. There is no difference between the atheists and the faithful in the Vaikuntha planets, because all who settle there are freed from the material qualities, and thus the suras and asuras become equally obedient, loving servitors of the Lord. That's an interesting statement. How can the asuras become equally obedient, loving servitors of the Lord in the spiritual world? And Prabhupada says there's no difference between the atheist and the faithful in the Vaikuntha planets. So what happens, the reason is, that for pastime's sake in the Vaikuntha planets, devotees may act in different ways, even as asuras. Just like in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita written by Sanatana Goswami, you have devotees playing the part of demons in the spiritual world. Some devotees play the part of the Keshi Devi, Some devotee plays the part of Arashtasura in the spiritual world, and all the other demons. So, therefore, even if you find an asura in the spiritual world, it's a play. Just like devotees in the temple sometimes will put a play on for the Sunday program. And in that play, one person will act like a materialist, or one person will act like a demon, or one person will act like a Aranyakashipu, or another one will act like Lord Nrisimhadev. So in this way, there's different playful pastimes going on. The residents of Vaikuntha have brilliantly black complexions. Now, here we're talking about the Vaikuntha planets, not necessarily Krishna Loka. In the Vaikuntha planets, all the residents either look like Lakshmi or Narayan. But in Krishna Loka, there's different colors, not just black complexions. The residents of Vaikuntha have brilliantly black complexions, much more fascinating and attractive than the dull white and black complexions found in the material world. It's a real rainbow festival. Their bodies, being spiritual, have no equals in the material world. The beauty of a bright cloud, when lightning flashes on it, merely hints at their beauty. Generally, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha dress in yellow clothing. Their bodies are delicate and attractively built, and their eyes are like the petals of lotus flowers. Like Lord Vishnu, the residents of Vaikuntha have four hands decorated with a conch shell, wheel, club, and lotus flower. Their chests are beautifully broad and fully decorated with necklaces of a brilliant diamond-like metal surrounded by costly jewels never to be found in the material world. The residents of Vaikuntha are always powerful and effulgent. Some of them have complexions like red coral cat's eyes and lotus flowers, and each of them has earrings of costly jewels. On their heads, they wear flowery crowns resembling garlands. In the Vaikunthas, there are airplanes, but they make no tumultuous sounds. Material airplanes are not at all safe. They can fall down and crash at any time, for matter is imperfect in every respect. In the spiritual sky, however, the airplanes are also spiritual, and they are spiritually brilliant and bright. These airplanes do not fly business executives. Politicians are planning commissions as passengers, nor do they carry cargo or the vaccine or postal bags, for these are unknown there. These planes are for pleasure trips only, and the residents of Vaikuntha fly in them with their heavenly, beautiful, fairy-like consorts. Therefore, these airplanes full of residents of Vaikuntha, both male and female, increase the beauty of the spiritual sky. We cannot imagine how beautiful they are, but their beauty may be compared to the clouds in the sky accompanied by silver branches of electric lightning. The spiritual sky of Vaikuntha Loka is always decorated in this way. And there's an interesting story in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita where Gopakumar goes to the Vaikuntha planets. And when he goes to the Vaikuntha planets, he sees all these different residents flying on their airplanes with their beautiful consorts. And he thinks the first one he sees is Lord Vishnu. But that's not a fact. Even though he looks like Lord Vishnu and his consort looks like Lakshmi, that's how everyone looks. But there's a distinguishing mark that only Lord Vishnu has, the Kastubha Mani and the Srivatsa. Srivatsa is a little hair on his chest. That's the goddess of fortune, that indicates the goddess of fortune. So there's the two distinguishing marks. Otherwise, everyone, practically everyone in the spiritual world, in Vaikuntha planets, has Sarupa, Sarupya Siddhi. That means they have the same form as that of the Lord. This is not Krishna Loka. Krishna Loka is different. The full opulence of the internal potency of Godhead is always resplendent in Vaikuntha Loka, where goddesses of fortune are ever increasingly attached to serving the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. These goddesses of fortune, accompanied by their friends, always create a festive atmosphere of transcendental mirth, that means happiness, humor. Always singing the glories of the Lord, they are not silent even for a moment. There are unlimited Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual sky, and the ratio of these planets to the material planets in the material sky is 3-1. Thus, the poor materialist is busy making political adjustments on a planet that is most insignificant in God's creation. To say nothing of this planet Earth, the whole universe with innumerable planets throughout the galaxies is comparable to a single mustard seed in a bag full of mustard seeds. But the poor materialist makes plans to live comfortably here and thus wastes his valuable human energy in something that is doomed to frustration. Instead of wasting his time with business speculations, he should seek the life of plain living and high spiritual thinking and thus save himself from perpetual material unrest. Even if a materialist wants to enjoy developed material facilities, he can transfer himself to planets where he can experience material pleasures much more advanced than those available on Earth. The best plan is to prepare oneself to return to the spiritual sky after leaving the body. Of course, here Prabhupada is referring to the heavenly planets, where people live such a long life, it's incomprehensible to us. And they're so beautiful. They don't need any deodorants for their bodies. Their bodies naturally smell very good. But these bodies that we have, these gross bodies, tridaduke, biomucus in air, and they're filled with so many of noxious substances. I remember in the early days at the movement, we always give these classes about the gross qualities of the body. And sometimes we describe the body or the beauty of the body as being only skin deep. We would say that if you love someone, peel off their skin and see if you still want to hold their hand or embrace them. Anyway, we would definitely gross people out. The best plan is to prepare oneself to return to the spiritual sky after leaving the body. However, if one is intent on enjoying material facilities, one can transfer himself to other planets in the material sky by utilizing yogic powers. The playful shapeships of the spaceships, not the playships, of the astronauts are but childish entertainments and are of no use for this purpose. The Ashtanga Yoga system is a materialistic art of controlling air by transferring it from the stomach to the navel, from the navel to the heart. We're talking about the chakras right now. From the heart to the collarbone, from there to the eyeballs, from there to the cerebellum, boop, and from there to any desired planet. So the yogi, when he would leave his body, he would pop out of what's called the Brahma Rundra. Brahma Rundra is up here, in case you want to pop out of your body like that. Go boop. But the devotees, generally, they don't utilize that process. They come out through the mouth. When they leave their body, they go, Hare Krishna. I've been with devotees when they left their bodies. They go, Hare Krishna. And the soul comes out. I was with my godbrother, Gaura Govinda Maharaj, when he left his body. He went, Krishna. And Prabhupada did the same thing. And so that's where the yogis, the devotees, bhakti yogis, leave their bodies by. And the hatha yogis by the top of the head. And the rock and roll stars, sorry about this, Prabhus, they leave their bodies by the lower apertures. That's why you read about these intoxicated musicians who leave their bodies when they are, sorry about this, on the toilet. They leave their bodies in there. Whew, what an inauspicious way to leave the body. Anyway. And a devotee is not concerned about when he or she leaves the body. Of course, in the Mahabharata, you have Grandfather Bhishma waiting until the sun was going to the north again. In other words, after the winter solstice, to leave his body. But for a pure devotee, he doesn't care. He can leave his body anywhere because he's remembering Krishna. Yam yam bhavi smaran bhavam yajate ante kalevaram tam tam vivaiti gondhya siddhata bhava bhavata. Whatever one remembers at the time of death, that's what happens to you. And if you remember your pet cat, guess what? You will be meowing in your next life. Like Bharat Maharaj, he remembered his pet deer, and he became a deer. And I don't know the sound that deer makes, so I can't imitate. So the velocities of air and light are taken into consideration by the material scientist, but he has no information of the velocity of the mind and intelligence. We have some limited experience of the velocity of the mind, because in a moment we can transfer our minds to places hundreds and thousands of miles away. Intelligence is even finer. Finer than intelligence is the soul, which is not matter like mind and intelligence, but is spirit or antimatter. The soul is hundreds of thousands of times finer and more powerful than intelligence. We can thus only imagine the velocity of the soul and its traveling from one planet to another. Needless to say, the soul travels by its own strength and not with the help of any kind of material vehicle. The bestial civilization, bestial is what it means, what it sounds like. Beasts, the bestial civilization of eating, sleeping, fearing, and sense gratifying, didn't say mating, has misled modern man into forgetting how powerful a soul he has. As we have already described, the soul is a spiritual spark, many, many times more illuminating, dazzling, and powerful than the sun, moon, or electricity. Human life is spoiled when man does not realize his real identity with his soul. Lord Chaitanya appeared with Lord Nityananda to save man from this type of misleading civilization. Srimad Bhagavatam also describes how yogis can travel to all the planets in the universe. When the vital force is lifted to the cerebellum, there is every chance that this force will burst out from the eyes, nose, ears, etc. But these are places that are known as the seventh orbit of the vital force. But the yogis can block these holes, block them, by complete suspension of air. The yogi then concentrates the vital force in the middle position, that is, between the eyebrows. At this position, the yogi can think of the planet to which he wants to go after leaving the body. He can then decide whether he wants to go to the abode of Krishna in the transcendental light consciousness, from which he will not be required to descend in the material world, or to travel to higher planets in the material universe. The perfect yogi is at liberty to do either. And of course, as we know from the Gita, Brahma Bhuvana Loka Puna Bhartino Arjuna Mamupechi Dukantiya Puna Janma Navijate, from the highest planet to the lowest planet, all places that are miserable. For the perfect yogi, who has attained success in the method of leaving his body in perfect consciousness, transferring from one planet to another is as easy as an ordinary man's walking to the grocery store. As already discussed, the material body is just a covering of the spiritual soul. Mind and intelligence are the undercoverings in the gross body of earth, water, air, and so on is the overcoating of the soul. As such, any advanced soul who has realized himself by the yogic process, who knows the relationship between matter and spirit, can leave the gross dress of the soul in perfect order and as he desires. By the grace of God, we have complete freedom. Because the Lord is kind to us, we can live anywhere, either in the spiritual sky or in the material sky, upon whichever planet we desire. However, misuse of this freedom causes one to fall down into the material world and suffer the threefold miseries of conditioned life. The living of a miserable life in the material world by dint of a soul's choice is nicely illustrated by Milton in Paradise Lost. Similarly, by choice, the soul can regain paradise and return home back to Godhead. At the critical time of death, one can place the vital force between the two eyebrows and decide where he wants to go. If he is reluctant to maintain any connection with the material world, he can, in less than a second, reach the transcendental abode of Vaikuntha and appear there completely in a spiritual body which will be suitable for him in the spiritual atmosphere. He has simply to desire to leave the material world both in finer and in grosser forms and then move the vital force to the topmost part of the skull, boom, and leave the body from the hole in the skull called the Brahmarandhra. This is easy for one perfect in the practice of yoga. Of course, man is endowed with free will, and as such, if he does not want to free himself from the material world, he may enjoy the life of Brahmapada, occupation of the post of Brahma, and visit Siddhaloka, the planets of materially perfect beings who have full capacities to control gravity, space, and time. To visit these higher planets in the material universe, one need not give up his mind and intelligence, finer matter, but need only give up grosser matter. That means Pancha Mahabhuta, the gross material body. Each and every planet has its particular atmosphere, and if one wants to travel to any particular planet within the material universe, one has to adapt his material body to the climatic condition of that planet. For instance, if one wants to go from India to Europe, where the climatic condition is different, one has to change his dress accordingly. Similarly, a complete change of body is necessary if one wants to go to the transcendental planets of Vaikuntha. However, if one wants to go to the higher material planets, he can keep his finer dress of mind, intelligence, and ego, but has to leave his gross dress, body made of earth, water, fire, etc. That's repetitive. When one goes to a transcendental planet, it is necessary to change both the finer and gross bodies, for one has to reach the spiritual sky completely in spiritual form. This change of dress will take place automatically at the time of death if one so desires. The Bhagavad Gita confirms that one will attain his next material body according to his desires. At the time he leaves his body, the desire of the mind carries the soul to a suitable atmosphere, as the wind carries aromas from one place to another. That's Bhagavad Gita. Unfortunately, those who are not yogis but gross materialists, who throughout their lives indulge in sense gratification are puzzled by the disarrangement of the bodily and mental condition at the time of death. Such gross with sensualists, encumbered by the main ideas, desires, and associations of the lives they have led, desire something against their interests and thus foolishly take on new bodies that perpetuate the material miseries. Systematic training of the mind and intelligence is therefore needed so that at the time of death one may consciously desire a suitable body, either on this planet or on another planet, or even a transcendental planet. A civilization that does not consider the progressive advancement of the immortal soul merely fosters a bestial life of ignorance. Long purport. I was hoping I'd give someone else a chance to read. I want to finish this purport. It is foolish to think that every soul that passes away goes to the same place. Either the soul goes to a place he desires at the time of death, or upon leaving the body he is forced to accept a position according to his acts in his previous life. The difference between the materialist and the yogi is that a materialist cannot determine his next body, whereas a yogi can consciously attain a suitable body for enjoyment on the higher planets. Throughout his life, the gross materialist, who is constantly after sense gratification, spends all day earning his livelihood to maintain his family, and at night he wastes his energy in sex enjoyment or else goes to sleep thinking about all that he has done in the daytime. That is the monotonous life of the materialist. Monotonous means boring. Although differently graded as businessmen, lawyers, politicians, professors, judges, coolies, pickpockets, laborers, and so on, materialists all simply engage in eating, sleeping, fearing, and sense gratification, and thus spoil their valuable lives pursuing luxury and neglecting to perfect their lives through spiritual realizations. Yogis, however, try to perfect their lives, and therefore the Bhagavad Gita enjoins that everyone should become a yogi. Yoga means someone who connects themselves with the Supreme. Yoga is the system for linking the soul in the service of the Lord. Only under superior guidance can one practice such yoga in his life without changing his social position. As already described, a yogi can go anywhere he describes or desires without mechanical help, for a yogi can place his mind and intelligence within the air circulating inside his body, and by practicing the art of breath control, he can mix that air with the air that blows all over the universe outside his body with the help of the universal air. Wow. A yogi can travel to any planet and get a body suitable for its atmosphere. We can understand this process by comparing it to the electronic transmission of radio messages. With radio transmitters, sound waves produced at a certain station can travel all over the earth in seconds, but sound is produced from the ethereal sky. And, as already explained, subtler than the ethereal sky is the mind, and finer than the mind is the intelligence. Spirit is still finer than the intelligence, and by nature it is completely different from matter. Thus, we can just imagine how quickly the spirit soul can travel through the material universe. I think we're almost finished with the purport. To come to the stage of manipulating finer elements like mind, intelligence, and spirit, one needs appropriate training, an appropriate mode of life, and appropriate association. Such training depends on sincere prayers, devotional service, achievement of success and mystic perfection, and the successful merging of oneself in the activities of the soul and supersoul. A gross materialist, whether he be an empiric philosopher, a scientist, a psychologist, or whatever, cannot attain such success through blunt efforts and word jugglery. See, this is a long purport. Anyway, so maybe we'll let some of the other devotees continue reading. I was hoping that we wait till we finish the purport till we switch devotees, but why don't we just switch right now? So, okay. So the next one to read is Swapna. So you can read. You're allowed to unmute now.
Hare Krishna Gurudev, please accept my humble obeisances. Thank
you. All glories to Prabhupada.
Materialists who perform yajnas or great sacrifices are comparatively better than grosser materialists who do not know anything beyond laboratories and test tubes. The advanced materialists who perform such sacrifices can reach the planet called Vaishvanara, a fiery planet similar to the sun. On this planet, which is situated on the way to Brahmaloka, the topmost planet in the universe, such an advanced materialist can free himself from all traces of vice and its effects. When such a materialist is purified, he can rise to the orbit of the pole star Dhruvaloka. Within this orbit, which is called the Sisumara Chakra, are situated the Aditya Lokas and the Vaikuntha planet within this universe. A purified materialist who has performed many sacrifices, undergone severe penances, and given the major portion of his wealth in charity can reach such planets as Dhruvaloka. And if he becomes still more qualified there, he can penetrate still higher orbits and pass through the navel of the universe to reach the planet Maharloka, where sages like Bhrigu Muni live. In Maharloka, one can live even to the time of the partial annihilation of the universe. This annihilation begins when Ananta Deva, from the lowest position in the universe, produces a great blazing fire. The heat of this fire reaches even Maharloka, and then the residents of Maharloka travel to Brahmaloka, which exists for twice the duration of Parardha time. In Brahmaloka, there is an unlimited number of aeroplanes that are controlled not by yantra, machine, but by mantra, psychic action. Because of the existence of the mind and intelligence on Brahmaloka, its residents have feelings of happiness and distress, but there is no cause of lamentation from old age, death, fear, or distress. They feel sympathy, however, for the suffering living beings who are consumed in the fire of annihilation. The residents of Brahmaloka do not have gross memories to change at death, but they transform their subtle bodies into spiritual bodies and thus enter the spiritual sky. The residents of Brahmaloka perfection in three different ways. Virtuous persons who reach Brahmaloka, virtuous persons who reach Brahmaloka by dint of their pious work become masters of various planets after the resurrection of Brahma. Those who have worshipped Garbhodakshaya Vishnu are liberated with Brahma, and those who are pure devotees of the personality of Godhead at once push through the covering of the universe and enter the spiritual sky. The numberless universes exist together in foam-like clusters, and so only some of them are surrounded by the water of the causal ocean. When agitated by the glands of Karna Dakshaya Vishnu, material nature produces the total elements, which are 8 in number and which gradually evolve from finer to gross. A part of ego is the sky, a part of which is air, a part of which is fire, a part of which is water, a part of which is earth. Thus, one universe inflates to an area of 4 billion miles in diameter. A yogi who desires gradual liberation must penetrate all the different coverings of the universe, including the subtle coverings of the three qualitative modes of material nature. One who does this never has to return to this mortal world. According to Sukadev Goswami, the above description of the material and spiritual skies is neither imaginary nor utopian. The actual facts are recorded in the Vedic hymns, and Lord Vasudeva disclosed them to Lord Brahma when Brahma satisfied him. One can achieve the perfection of life only when he has a definite idea of Vaikuntha and the Supreme Godhead. One should always think about and describe the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for this is recommended in both the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavat Purana, which are two authorized commentaries upon the Vedas. Lord Chaitanya has made all these subject matters easier for the fallen people of this age to accept, and Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita has therefore presented them for the easy understanding of all concerned. Text 23. Madhura Dwarakaya Nijarupa Prakashya Nana Rupe Vilasaye Chaturvyuha Haina. Lord Krishna manifests his own form in Madhura and Dwaraka. He enjoys pastimes by expanding into quadruple forms. Vasudeva Sankarshana Pradyumnani Ruddha Sarva Chaturvyuha Amsi Turiya Visuddha. Vasudeva, Sankarshana, Pradyumna and Anuruddha are the primary quadruple forms from whom all other quadruple forms are manifested. They are all purely transcendental. Etina Loke Krishna Kevala Leela Maya Nijagana Lana Kele Ananta Samaya. Only in these three places, Dwaraka, Mathura and Gokula, does the all-sporting Lord Krishna perform his endless pastimes with his personal associates. Aravyoma Madhye Kari Swarupa Prakasha Narayana Rupe Karane Vivida Vilasa. In the Vaikuntha planets of the spiritual sky, the Lord manifests his identity as Narayana and performs pastimes in various ways. Swarupa Vigraha Krishnera Kevala Dvibhuja Narayana Rupe Sitanu Chaturbhuja Shankha Chakra Gada Padma Maheshwarya Maya Shri Bhunila Sakti Yanra Charana Sevaya. Krishna's own form has only two hands, but in the form of Lord Narayana, he has four hands. Lord Narayana holds a conch shell, disc, club and lotus flower, and he is full of great opulence. The Shri Bhu and Nila energies serve at his lotus feet. Purport. In the Ramanuja and Madhva sects of Vaishnavism, there are extensive descriptions of the Shri, Bhu and Nila energies. In Bengal, the Nila energy is sometimes called the Leela energy. These three energies are employed in the service of four-handed Narayana in Vaikuntha. Relating how three of the Alvars, namely Bhuta Yogi, Sara Yogi and Brantha Yogi, saw Narayana in person when they took shelter at the house of a Brahmana in the village of Gehali, the Prapannamrita of the Sri Sampradaya describes Narayana as follows. Tarsyadi Rudham Tadit Ambudabham Lakshmi Dharam Vakshasi Pankajaksham Hastadvaye Shobita Shankar Chakram Vishnum Dadrushur Bhagavantam Adhyam Ajanu Bahum Kamaniya Gatram Parshvadvaye Shobita Bhumi Neelam Pitambaram Bhushana Bhushitangam Chaturbhujam Chandana Rushitangam. They saw the lotus-eyed Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, mounted on Garuda and holding Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, to his chest. He resembled a bluish rain cloud with flashing lightning, and in two of his four hands he held a conch shell and disc. His arms stretched down to his knees, and all his beautiful limbs were smeared with sandalwood and decorated with glittering ornaments. He wore yellow clothes, and by either side stood his energies, Bhumi and Nila. There is the following reference to the Shri, Bhu and Nila energies in the Sitopanishad. Mahalakshmi Devash Devesh Devi Bhinna Bhinna Rupa Chetana Chetanatmika Sa Devi Trivida Bhavati Saktatmana Icha Sakti Kriya Sakti Saksha Chaktir Iti Icha Shaktis Trivida Bhavati Shri Bhumi Nilamika. Mahalakshmi, the supreme energy of the Lord, is experienced in different ways. She is divided into material and spiritual potencies, and in both features, she acts as the willing energy, creative energy, and the internal energy. The willing energy is again divided into three, namely Shri, Bhu, and Nila. Quoting from the revealed scriptures in his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter, 6th verse, Madhvacharya has stated that Mother Material Nature, which is conceived of as the illusory energy Durga, has three divisions, namely Shri, Bhu and Nila. She is the illusory energy for those who are weak in spiritual strength, because such energies are created energies of Lord Vishnu. Although each energy has no direct relationship with the unlimited, they are subordinate to the Lord because the Lord is the master of all energies. In his Bhagavad Sandarbha, text 23, Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu states, the Padma Purana refers to the eternally auspicious abode of Godhead, which is full in all opulences, including the energies Shri, Bhu and Nila. The Mahasamhita, which discusses the transcendental name and form of Godhead, also mentions Durga as the potency of the super soul in relationship with the living entities. The internal potency acts in relation with his personal affairs, and the material potency manifests the three modes. Quoting elsewhere from the revealed scriptures, he states that Shri is the energy of Godhead that maintains the cosmic manifestation, Bhu is the energy that creates the cosmic manifestation, and Nila Durga is the energy that destroys the creation. All these energies act in relation with the living beings, and thus they are together called Jiva Maya.
Okay, you can end there. I just want to clarify this whole discussion about Shibu and Nila. That Shibu and Nila have their spiritual counterparts and also their counterparts within this material world. Just like Krishna is in the spiritual world, and then Krishna expands as Lord Shiva to be in the material world. Just like Krishna is there with Radharani, who's the Adi Shakti Radharani expands as the various Lakshmis, and in the spiritual realm you have Shibu and Nila, and then also an expansion of Shibu and Nila in the spiritual world are the Shibu and Nila in this world. And as described here, Shri is the energy of God. Godhead, because Shri can also, in the spiritual world, also refers to Lakshmi. So in the material world, Shri refers to the energy of God, the maintenance of the cosmic manifestation. Bhu is the creative element, and Nila is the energy that destroys the creation. But in the spiritual world, Nila is Lila, or the activities of the Lord in the spiritual world. I know it's a little complex, but there's aspects of the Lord's potencies that are reflected within the material world that have the same name as the Lord's potencies in the spiritual realm. I know that may be difficult to understand. Just like you have Krishna, Lord Vishnu, and then Lord Shiva, who is actually not a jiva soul, not Shakti Tattva, but his own special category. He's Krishna within the material world who comes in contact with the material nature. And he's not the same as Krishna, but he comes from Krishna just like yogurt, the Brahma Samhita says, comes from milk. And it can't go back the other way. Nobody's ever made milk from yogurt. Plenty of people have made yogurt from milk. Okay, so now we can take some questions. Does anyone have any questions about any of the subject matters? Let me take you all off of mute so you can ask questions. And today, of course, is the Sunday feast, the virtual Sunday feast, but it's Monday for some of you who are online with us. Actually, Monday for a lot of you who are online with us. So anybody have any questions? Speak now.
Hare Krishna. Oh, sorry.
I'll let Chaitanya speak.
Are you sure? Okay. Thank you, Guru Maharaj. Dandavat pranam to you. Well, just listening to the way you were describing how the soul leaves the body at different times and different yogis and so forth, how are we to understand when, there's an elevated devotee, like a sannyasi or somebody that meets accidental death or something like that happens? You know what I mean? So what's the situation there?
Well, Krishna takes care of him. It's not mechanistic. That's why for a devotee, it's really not important how, when, why you leave your body, because it's all arranged by Krishna and Krishna personally takes you. Whereas for the yogis, they have to be very concerned as to the place, very concerned as to the time of the year, the time of the day, the weather, the astrological calculations, all those things had to be taken into account. Like Grandfather Bhishma, he was very concerned about that. So he was lying on this bed of arrows until the sun started to take its northern course again, started to head towards the north. Because we know in the winter, because India is also in the northern hemisphere as we are here. Of course, you're in the southern hemisphere. So I guess the times of leaving your body in the southern hemisphere would be different than in the northern hemisphere. How to figure that out, I have no idea. I don't yet know whether all the calculations work the same way in the southern hemisphere as they do in the northern hemisphere, whether Vastu works in the same way. That is not my field of expertise. But for a devotee, it doesn't really matter. A devotee is personally taken care of by Krishna. He's held in Krishna's hands. Krishna's like Krishna's like the father who's holding his devotee, like Rakabai devotee on the treetop, as the song goes. He's holding his devotee, and the devotee doesn't really have to worry. However, he leaves his body, car accident, in a war or other ways, you know, or in Vrindavan or preaching Krishna consciousness somewhere else other than Vrindavan. It really is not significant for a devotee, except a devotee is thinking of Krishna, because Krishna gives the ultimate instruction in the Gita. He says, yam yam bapi smaran bhavatam, whatever one is remembering at the time of death, that's where one will go, and the devotee is remembering Krishna. If a devotee leaves in a plane accident, he's remembering Krishna. If a devotee leaves when he has COVID, he's remembering Krishna. So for a devotee, you know, it's not really that significant. But generally, I mentioned that a devotee generally leaves through the mouth. You know, he doesn't take the trouble. For a devotee, it's too much trouble. He'd rather be preaching Krishna consciousness than taking trouble focusing his right there between his eyebrows and then moving it up and popping out the Brahma Rantra. He sees that as a waste of time. He'd rather be sharing Krishna consciousness with others and distributing Prabhupada's books and serving Prabhupada. So for a devotee, it's insignificant where he leaves or how he leaves his body.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
Sometimes we find people criticizing devotees who left their body in a so-called inauspicious way, you know, either through a car accident or something like that. But it doesn't matter for a devotee. It really doesn't matter how a devotee leaves his body as long as he's thinking of Krishna. You know,
that's precisely why I just want a clarification. If something like that happens, is it inauspicious or not? But
there's nothing inauspicious for a devotee. Right. Prabhupada said he wanted that, even though Prabhupada left the body in Vrindavan, Prabhupada said he wanted to die on the battlefield. Prabhupada said, I want to die like a Kshatriya, fighting for Krishna on the battlefield. So that's a glorious death. So if a devotee is traveling somewhere to go on a preaching engagement or whatever, it's glorious. It's glorious. Whatever way a devotee leaves is glorious. And as far as a yogi, yes, someone who's into hatha yoga has to be very, very careful how he leaves his body. Yes, a proper circumstance. So, yes.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that, Maharaj. Yeah.
We don't have to worry. I'm not going to worry how I'm going to leave my body because Krishna will take care of it. You know, leave my body, whatever. Of course, on the other hand, here's another point. A devotee is not foolish and he doesn't put his body at risk. I mean, that's foolishness. That means you want Krishna to serve you instead of your thinking that you should serve Krishna. And then Krishna shows you, hey, buddy, you can't do that. Just like I've seen many times, sometimes we watch these videos of devotees in India, and nobody's wearing a mask. You know, devotees in Vrindavan or devotees in Mayapur, and people are crowded, touching each other, just like it was an ordinary year in Sridhar Mayapur. Nobody's wearing a mask. And then they wonder why the virus is spreading. And they can't just blame Krishna and say, oh, it's Krishna's desire. I remember when I would go to Mayapur for our GBC meetings, every year I'd come down with very severe coughing and congestion and everything like that. And you could say, well, it was Krishna's mercy, purification, Prabhu. But actually, when I stopped doing that, when I simply went to the Samadhi, which was not crowded, for Mangalarti, I never got sick. Not even once did I get sick. And every time I went to the temple, which was crowded, I went to the temple later in the day to see the deities, and every time I went to the temple, I got sick. So you can say, well, Krishna didn't want to see you. That's why you got sick. Krishna was punishing you because you showed your ugly face in front of him. No. Because the material energy works in such a way. And devotees, I just seen so many devotees are just like so transcendental, they don't know about the law of gravity. They think, you know, if I jump off the building, you know, Krishna's going to, I'm going to fly. It's going to be like Prahlad Maharaj being caught by Lord Vishnu when Prahlad Maharaj was thrown off a cliff by Hiranyakashipu. And they think, I don't have to wear a seatbelt because Krishna's protecting me. And then there's that famous story that Prabhupada tells, how this guy, he had full faith in God, and there was a flood, and when there was a flood, a boat came to try to save him. He was trapped in his house. And he said, no, God will save me. And then he went up to his attic, and a helicopter came and lowered a rope, and he said, God is supposed to save me. And then he died from the flood, and he went to, I don't know if he went to heaven, but he saw God, and he said, God, why didn't you do your duty and save me? And God said to him, you foolish rascal, didn't you see the boat and the helicopter I sent? So, you know, like these, they're sent by Krishna. These masks are sent by Krishna. I see Krishna in the mask. See? You don't, because you're not purified enough. But I see Krishna in the mask because he sent the mask to keep me from kicking a bucket. But someone else thinks, oh, these masks are Maya. You don't have full faith in the holy name. You know, people think like that. And so then we have so many devotees passing away. And because of that right now in Sridhar Mayapur, because the devotees didn't take adequate precautions, they gave Jatpataka Maharaj the COVID virus. Because they're just lackadaisical. Prabhupada was very careful about things. You know, Prabhupada was very careful. I mean, Prabhupada was a pharmacist before he took sannyas or renounced the world. So Prabhupada knew about these things. Prabhupada would prescribe, when devotees got sick, Prabhupada would prescribe some sort of medicine. He didn't just say, chant Hare Krishna, Prabhu, and you'll get better. He told them what to do, what to take, how to rest. You know, we have to be practical, but, you know, it's just like, you know, anyway, I know this is one of my pet peeves about devotees, you know, especially now with this COVID thing. You know, it's very dangerous. Very, very dangerous. And devotees are thinking, I don't need the vaccine. Krishna will take. Krishna is the vaccine. The holy name is the vaccine. Well, good luck, Prabhu. Okay, so who else has a question?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Bhakta Steve is here, and he wants to know if you can be a devotee if you're not initiated.
You can be a devotee, yeah. But you have to be devoted. What does it mean to be a devotee? It means like not joining the Kiwanis Club or the or something like that, or what are the clubs they have anyway, or joining or signing on to Netflix or something. He thinks that it's like joining Netflix. That you get a subscription to Netflix, and then. Then you're a devotee. Devotee means devoted. And that means whatever Krishna wants. Yes, sir.
Yes.
You know, can you be a member of the army without listening to the commanding officer? I don't think so. So anyway, so it's yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. Control your senses, yes, sir. Chant Hare Krishna, 16 rounds, yes, sir. That's devoted. Devotee means devoted. And we're not like in the Wizard of Oz here. In the Wizard of Oz, you know, the scarecrow wanted a brain. I don't know if any of you know the Wizard of Oz. Probably none of you have seen it. But the scarecrow wanted a brain, so they just gave him a certificate. You know, you have a brain. And the Tin Man wanted a heart, I think. Yeah. And then they just gave him a clock. And Dorothy wanted to go back home to Godhead. She was intelligent of all of them. And so what she did is she just chanted Hare Krishna and went back to the spiritual world. I want to go home. I want to go home. I want to go home. And she went back to the spiritual world. Probably none of you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know.
You know, and the lion, the lion, he wanted courage. So I guess they just gave him some sort of certificate that he won the wrestling match or something like that. I don't remember what they did with the lion. So the lion wanted courage. So in other words, we have to have the qualities. The point is, you know, initiation is there, but the point is the qualities. What are the qualities of a devotee? That's the point. All right? You have another question?
Yes.
Yeah, what's the other question?
So say in the beginning, Krishna gives you a lot of mercy. You're on the, you're galloping around on the horse of Krishna consciousness, and then all of a sudden, the arrows of Maya, the javelin, takes you off of your nice steed of Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Next thing you know, you're in the mud of your own ignorance,
yeah,
because and then you get back on because you have like a nice page or some mercy from the king,
yeah,
or and then next thing you know you're galloping around and everything's good again, but then oh my god, you just got hit by a catapult, a flying fireball of tar and feathers, and next thing you know you're out again, but then you get back up again and you're
so,
like
so what's the question?
How is this something that will ever stop? Like, have you heard of devotees that have just kept falling off the horse and getting back on their whole life, and like they never actually like
No way, nobody falls off the horse; they jump off the horse. Yeah, that's the point. It's not that they fall off the horse. You know, they just like it's like. Let me give you an example from Krishna's pastimes. When Rukmini came out, when Krishna was kidnapping her, everyone else fell off. They actually did fall off their horse because she was so beautiful, but they decided. Anyway, so we have a free will. Krishna gives us the energy. The devil didn't make us do it. And anyway, I mean, even if we struggle sometimes, we just get back on. It's like learning to walk. Prabhupada gave the example that when a child learns to walk, a child sometimes falls down a little bit and then he gets up again. And he falls down again and he gets up again. You know, I remember the first time I was learning to ride a bike. I remember this very well. They had to put training wheels on so I wouldn't fall down. And so eventually they took the training wheels off and I never fell down after that from the bike. Mm-hmm. Anyway, don't worry. Take responsibility. Do it. Do it. Nobody's stopping you but yourself. Take responsibility. You are your own worst enemy or your own best friend. If you decide to do it, you can do it. I mean, the only time when someone has an excuse is if they're actually, you know, brain damaged. Or if they're actually like only 2 years old. I think a little child of 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old, up to about 8 years old has an excuse. That's why it says that up to 8 years of age, a child doesn't accrue karma because they're not responsible for what they do.
That's good.
So up to 8 and then after 80. I'm just waiting. 80. After 80, I can just enjoy life. Go bungee jumping. Anyway, so not really. So basically, we're all responsible. We should take responsibility. Okay. Okay. So now, see if Aditya Narayan Prabhu has any announcements for us. He's online. Because he's our fearless leader. Do you have any announcements?
Just want to wish everyone a very happy Krishna Conscious New Year from our temple, on behalf of our temple. And no, Maharaj, I don't think I have any announcements. You know, just general announcements are, you can always make donations to our temple. We are continuing our service to Sri Sri Radha Golokananda. And actually on 1st of January, many people came forward to sponsor the first aarti for the new year, or the first Rajbhog aarti. Wow. So that was very nice. So yeah, any sponsorship is always wonderful to give something to Sri Sri Radha Golokananda. And if you'd like to make any sponsorship, you can go to our website, newgoloka.com, or PayPal, newgoloka108@gmail.com.
Very nice. Aditya Narayan is in charge of all of our preaching. He's made so many devotees and put us on the top of the book charts. And he's an amazing devotee. He and his wife are an amazing team. He's worth his weight in diamonds, not just gold.
Maharaj, what the little I'm doing is only by your blessings. There's nothing more on my part. It's just your guidance and blessings, and I'm able to do whatever little I'm doing. But
anyway, he's a great devotee. We have great devotees in our community. We are very fortunate. Yeah, Krishna's really blessed us. Okay, thank you all very much, and Happy New Year. And we will see everybody tomorrow evening, same time, same station. All glories to His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.